Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Sting stories when we come back. Well, those who already walk submissively will say that there is no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. And the Constitution was designed to keep governments off the backs of the people. And the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts and belief of expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. I wish I would have thought of that, but that quotation comes from our Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, you know, our princes and politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, more gun control. And you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth for more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left here in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process. It doesn't come from our politicians or our lawyers or our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either." Because the real power in America is in our courts, it's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about sting. Sting operations are usually carried out by government. But it isn't just government that needs to employ the sting operation for the purposes of keeping our rights, liberties, and our freedoms intact. Indeed, the role of the citizen after the Civil Rights Act of 1868 was passed was put at the forefront for the express purpose of keeping our freedoms and our liberties intact, and to keep them intact against the oppression of government bureaucrats, government officials. It's like a safety valve. There has to be some mechanism by which the police and public officials can be brought to account. Government can't always do that. Now, I pointed out in the last program, the FBI has a section, a bureau, a group somewhere. I don't know exactly what they call themselves, but their job is to go around the country and to entrap. Well, no, I shouldn't say entrap because that's an illegal term. But to monitor, to sting is the vernacular word that we use, those public officials who are in clear violation of our laws, who are oppressing people, taking bribes, or who are unjust judges, or politicians taking bribes and are corrupted. And they do a pretty good job of it. But they can't be everywhere all the time, but citizens are, in fact, everywhere all the time. Unfortunately, most citizens do not know what their rights are or how to employ those rights. So I thought, well, let's take a look at this process that's called the sting in police circles. And let's see if we can employ those same tactics and techniques on the part of citizens against corrupt public officials. And let's see if we can get a remedy and make some meaningful political, social, economic changes at the local level. There's a story that I was involved in many years ago that dealt with Article 1, Section 9 of our Constitution. And I looked at Article 1, Section 9, where it says, no state shall compel any vessel to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in a port of entry. And I looked at that and I said, that looks like to me that these roadside way stations are in violation of that section of our Constitution. And I'd never done a case before, but I looked at that and I said, I think that needs to be tested. Now, at the time, I was operating a company called Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and we had a truck on the road, and it had a long trailer behind it. It was about a 55-foot rig, a special furniture hauling truck and trailer. So one night when I had it loaded, I got to the scale down at Bliss, Idaho. It's in Gooding County. And I decided to challenge this law. So instead of pulling off and weighing the truck and going through the regular procedures that you see all of these trucks lined up going over the scale at this roadside stand, that's a truck weigh station. So I just drove right on by. And as I was driving by, I looked at the guy in the scale shack, and I'm not sure that he saw me. There's one on each side of the freeway there, but anyway, I drove on down the road and nothing happened, and I made my deliveries and came back to the plant, and I said, I wonder if these guys know about Article 1, Section 9. And they put a sign up alongside the road that says all trucks exit next right, and then if you don't exit next right, they just leave you alone because you know the law and they don't. That was my first reaction. So I tried it again, and sure enough, the next time he didn't stop either. But the next time, he did see me. And I could look out of the side of the truck as I went by. And as I went by, I waved and went on down the road, and nothing happened. And so I thought, well, what do you know about that? So the upshot of that was I thought, well, see, that proves my point. Well, either one of two things. Either he's lazy and doesn't want to do his job, or two, he recognizes that I'm not one of those that has to stop at the scale. So I did it a third time. I came by every Friday night, and so it was, 1 week, and then the next week, and then the third week we went by, I thought, well, maybe I ought to test this a little bit more. And so as I went by, I gave him the international flag of distress. Now, that got him very excited. His adrenaline was flowing, and so he made that telephone call and a radio call. And the next thing I knew, there was red lights behind me. And so I pulled over, and it was a policeman by the name of Mogenden, Officer Mogenden, an older fellow, very courteous, nice guy. I didn't have any complaints about him. He came up, and he said, hey, you didn't stop at the scale back there. And then I told him, well, of course I didn't stop at the scale because of Article 1, Section 9 of our Constitution. And he didn't grasp the significance of that. And he said, well, I'm gonna write you a ticket for not stopping at the scale. And so he wrote me a ticket. It's a violation of Idaho Code 29. Oh, it's Title 49, Section 2927. So he created the damage that I needed now to go argue this case in court. So when it came time to go to arraignment, I went in, pled not guilty. And I knew that because I'd been watching Perry Mason's, and I get my education, my legal education from television. And so as time progressed along, there was a fellow by the name of Turner who had written a series of papers called the Bear Bait Briefs. Bear Bait Briefs. And And he was over in Colorado someplace, I forgot exactly where, and so I followed his motions on such things as jury trial and speedy trial and things like that. These are motions that you put in before the court to set legal issues to be decided and maybe appealed on later on. Now, remember, this is my very first trial. I've never done one of these before, and I didn't have any particular experience. But, you know, being an American, I said, you know, we've got rights, and so I'm going to express my rights. I'm going to go in here, just like I told you about the Morton Grove, Illinois story yesterday. I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to bring my grievances before the courts, and I'm going to get my day in court and so on. Well, the judge in this case, his name was Judge Becker. Nice fellow. He's probably 40 years old or so. A little bit older than I was at the time, but, you know, nice guy. And when I came in, he said to me, and when the proceedings got underway, he said, "Now, Mr. Gordon, do you know where you are today?" And kind of caught me off guard, and I said, "Well, yes, sir, we're in Gooding, Idaho." And he said, "Well, I wouldn't have known that by your pleadings, because these pleadings are all addressed to the 14th Judicial Circuit of Colorado Springs, or Boulder, Colorado. I forgot where this place was from." And I looked down at my papers, and sure enough, at the top of the page, at the heading, it said, in and for the county of Boulder, state of Colorado. Now, here was my first error. You can see how inexperienced I was. I took this package in, like most patriots do, to my secretary, and I said, "Here, type these up for me." And when I got them, she had typed them up. Now, I would have thought that she would have typed in the 10th Judicial District in and for Gooding County, Idaho, as the heading, that she would have seen that. Or it never entered my mind. It never crossed my mind that, you know, there's headings and margins and there are rules that have to be followed here. So I was, to say the least, embarrassed. And the judge said, "It's all right. I'll overlook that, and I'll just cross that out." And he, up on the bench, you know, he just took his pen, you know, and crossed that out, and he said, "I'll just write in our district here." "All right, now, Mr. Gordon, why don't you go ahead and tell us what it is in these motions that you want?" Well, now, I'd never made an oral argument before, and I'd never been instructed in how to make an oral argument, so I started off and I told the judge about Article 1, Section 9 and jury trials. I gave him a real lesson in civics is what I did. And I told him about the freedoms of Americans, and I told him about everything that had absolutely nothing to do with this case. Which is, you know, about what most patriots do when they go into court. They talk about civics and government and limited government and all kinds of neat stuff, you know, that's probably got a lot of merit. Everywhere except in the courtroom, where this is not where we came to do a civics lesson. We came here to transact some judicial business. And the judge was very patient with me, very patient. And he listened to all these arguments and one thing and another. And I expounded to him about rights, and I told him all about the Article 1, Section 9 thing. And we went on and on about like that. So when we got through, after I'd explained all my constitutional rights, you know, and so on, and when we got through, he said, "Thank you, Mr. Gordon." The prosecutor, you know, put in his 2 cents worth too, you know. But at the end of the proceeding there, an hour or so later, he said, "Now, Mr. Gordon, you have raised a number of very serious constitutional questions. And I'm going to, ordinarily," he said, "I would take this under advisement and give an opinion in writing in about 21 days, but he said, "In this case, I don't think that'll be necessary." He went on to say, now, this motion here for a jury trial is granted, and this motion over here for a speedy trial is granted, and this motion over here for... He went through those, and he said, granted, granted, granted. And then he got to a couple of three there, and he said, now, as to this motion to dismiss, which on the grounds of this article on Section 9 over here, I'm going to deny that. And then I note in here... that this motion is based upon these constitutional grounds. Now, since this is a jury trial, I want to admonish you, Mr. Gordon, not to mention the word Constitution in front of the jury. And if you mention the word Constitution at any time during the trial in front of the jury, I'm going to hold you in contempt of court, and I'm going to sentence you to 5 days in jail for each and every separate offense of mentioning the word Constitution in front of the jury. Well, needless to say, I was absolutely shocked. You talk about a corrupt fifth column, commie, pinko, fag judge. Now, that Judge Becker was at the top of my list. And when I got back to my office, I told everybody there what a communist and a no good this Judge Becker was. And now, he had sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and violated his oath of office by you know, not just telling me not to do it, but by threatening to put me in jail if I did mention the word Constitution in front of my fellow citizens, my fellow jurors, my peers. So we went to trial, and of course the prosecution goes first because this is a criminal action. And so the prosecutor, he got up there with Officer Mogenden and his backup and the guy at the scale, and they testified that they saw this truck driving down the road, and that the truck did not stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry, and that that was a violation of the Idaho Code 49-29-27, and, you know, they did their job. That was their duty, and they did it. And then when the state rested their case, I looked at the clock, and it was 5 minutes to 12. So I want to pass this on to all of you, and just in case you'd never heard this before. The magic hour for lunch in the courtroom is 5 minutes to 12. So if you have another witness that you want to put on, you don't put him on at 5 minutes to 12, because that might run over the lunch hour by 5 or 10 minutes. And then that's going to disrupt lunch and make the judge very upset. Judges do not like to have the lunch hour screwed up. Now, I had heard that. And so at 5 minutes to 12, the prosecutor concluded his case, and he rested, which was exactly correct. He did the right thing. But then the judge looked over at me, and he said, now, Mr. Gordon, it's close to lunch, and before we take on your half of the case, do you have any administrative process to bring up? And I said, yes, Your Honor, I'd like to move to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. And the judge paused for about, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 seconds for a little effect. And he looked down at me, and he said, Mr. Gordon, what was it that the state failed to prove in their prima facie case for which you believe that I should dismiss? Now, you see, I didn't know what it was that they failed to dismiss. I just knew that that was the point in the proceedings when I should make that motion, because I had been told, you know, by my patriot comrades that when you get to that point, you just move to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. And I thought that that was like holding a cross up in front of Dracula, and he would just fall back. You know, just fall down. But I was holding up my cross, and The judge didn't fall down, and the prosecutor didn't fall down, the police didn't fall down, and quite frankly, I did not know what it was. Now, remember the judge's question. He said, what was it that the state failed to prove for which I should dismiss their action? And I didn't know. And I stood there in awkward silence. And I said, I don't know. And the judge said, well, I do. But I won't. And now it's time for lunch, and court is adjourned until 1:30. So we went to lunch, and while I was eating lunch, I kept thinking about the judge said, well, I do, but I won't. Well, I do, but I won't. Now, the judge said, can you tell me what it was that they failed to prove? I recognized at that point in time, I'm supposed to tell the judge what it is that the state failed to prove, and I didn't know. So that sent me a very strong signal. It said, you know, you really don't know what you're doing in here. And I'm very grateful to Judge Becker that he was so patient with me. He was kind of like a kindly college professor trying to help along a student, you know, that didn't quite get his lessons. And he wasn't going, you know, I was trying hard. I was giving it the old college try, but I just didn't quite have my act together. Well, at 1:30, we came back, and we're sitting here in the courtroom. And waiting for the judge to come in. Now, if you have ever been in court, you know what the procedure is. The bailiff says, all rise, please. And everybody stands up, and the judge comes in from the side and then walks over to the bench, and then he sits down and calls court, you know, to into session. But it was different this day. It was really different. In this case, the judge came in from the back of the courtroom, and he walked through all of the pews, you know, like in court. It's court. Courtrooms look just like, and they're laid out just like churches. The courtroom, in reality, is a church. It's a religious proceeding is what it is. Now, most people don't see that, and they don't understand what kind of religious proceeding is going on here, but I'll just point out to you that the judge sits on an elevated platform up there. Well, that's the altar. And the judge is the high priest, and that's why judges wear robes instead of business suits. And then the jury sits over in the place that we normally put the choir, and there's this fence that goes across the middle, you know. And if you look in your church, you know, you've got this same layout over here. Well, this fence that goes across there is called the bar. And if you want to see how holy that bar is, go sit on it. Yeah, you just go sit on the bar, that little fence that goes across there. That bar separates the congregation. Those are the witnesses in the back, the taxpayers and so on, from the proceedings. And in ancient times, this was called the veil to the holy place. So when you want to go through the veil to the holy place, you have to go with a priest or the priest's aide, which is called a lawyer. He's an officer of the court. And you have to have this intercessor in order to approach the high priest. You go with an intercessor called a lawyer. So you then go up to the priest and you make your pleading. It's a prayer for relief. And in fact, in our pleadings in paragraph 20, we actually use the word prayer in court. We make a prayer for relief. So anyway, at that time I didn't understand all of that. I could see it, but I didn't quite understand what it all meant. But here comes the judge now from the back of the courtroom. He walks up, and as he is going up to the bench, he comes through the little swinging gates in the bar. He stops at the defense table, and he looked down at me. He put his arm on my shoulder, and he looked down at me, and he said, God, I wish I had this case. I would win it in 5 minutes. And then he went on up and sat down, and the bailiff was absolutely dumbfounded. He had never seen this before, evidently, and he didn't know what to do next, and the judge just called everything to order, and he said, "Now, Mr. Gordon, we're at the point in the proceedings for the defense to put on their half of the case, and so you may call your first witness." And so I did, and I got on the stand, and I testified, and in my testimony, I told a story about why I had done this. Never mentioned the word Constitution. I didn't go to jail. The judge did not put me in jail for contempt. That's because I did not mention the word Constitution in the court. But I told my story, and I admitted right out of my own mouth, I said, I didn't stop at the scale, and I didn't stop for legal reasons, and I'm not a person required to stop there, and so on, and I told my story. And so when the proceedings ended, and the defense rested, the judge then instructed the jury. They have what they call the standard jury instructions. And he instructed the jury, and he sent them out. And while they were deliberating, I was sitting in the courtroom at the counsel table with my friend and counsel. And his name was Steve Gibson. And we were chit-chatting a little bit. And pretty soon, the judge's clerk came in, and I recognized her from the office, you know, the judge's clerk. And she came in, she didn't say very much, but she said, "Mr. Gordon, the judge is available." And she turned and she went out. Now, I didn't have a clue as to what, "God, I wish I had this case, I'd win it in 5 minutes," meant. And I didn't have a clue as to what, "Mr. Gordon, the judge is available," meant. I didn't know that either. I'd never heard that before. But, of course, this is my very first trial, so it would be understandable that I had never encountered these kinds of legal terms before. I asked Steve what that meant, and he said he didn't know. And so I felt like, well, we've got the blind leading the blind here. So, being a salesman and all, I said, "Well, we're not going to find out unless we go ask." So I said, "Let's go back and ask." And so as I walked into the clerk's office, you know, about 60 seconds behind the judge's clerk, as I walked into the office, she saw me, and she said, "Follow me." And so I got behind her, and I started following her, and Steve was behind me, and we went down this hall, and then we went into this room that later I discovered was the judge's chambers. I'm back into the inner sanctum of the courthouse. I'm in here where the private office of the judge is located, called chambers. Judges don't have offices. Judges have chambers. All right. So we went into the judge's chambers, and he has nice office furniture. That was one of the first things I noted as I looked around the chambers. Now, you need to understand that Gooding County now is it's one of the small counties in the state. There's only two judges in the county that handle all the county's business, but then there's only about 6,000 people in the county. And two judges seem to be enough to handle the county's business. The courthouse isn't very big, and it's located in a little town named Gooding, Idaho. I don't know how big Gooding is, but it's not very big. Or at least at that time, it wasn't very big. You know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people, maybe. And so the judge's clerk invited us to sit down in two nice big chairs in front of the judge's desk. Now, these nice big chairs sitting in front of the judge's desk were not as big as the judge's chair, which was even bigger than our big chairs. So we were sitting there, just kind of looking around the room. It's filled with law books, at least at that time it was. And there was no computer. This is before computers, so the judge did not have a computer sitting on his desk, although I note now that all judges have computers. In fact, they even have them up on the bench, and in fact, the judges are tapping away on their computers all during the proceedings, and they're pretty technologically advanced now, judges here in the United States. So pretty soon, as we're sitting there, the judge comes in through his door, and he whips off his robe, and he hangs up his robe on a tree, you know, one of these hat trees or clothes trees. And he whipped around and he looked right at me and he said, "God, I thought you had him. I thought you had him, but you let him go." Did you get that, boys and girls? The judge said, "God, I thought you had him, but you let him go." And with that, it's halfway time, so let me give you a reminder while you're mulling that one over, and we'll be right back talking about the sting stories when we return. Now, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and if you'll click on to our archives page, you'll see a number of pages there. Just scroll down and you'll see archives page. You click onto that one and you can download our free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and in Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the sting stories, and in this particular story, this is the Bliss Scale sting story. This was the first event at the Bliss Scale, where we wanted to test Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. And Judge Becker had admonished me at the motion hearing that I ought not to raise constitutional issues, at least not in front of the jury. And I thought he was a communist. I thought he had violated his oath of office and one thing and another. And now, as you know, like most patriots would, but as time progressed along, fortunately for me, the judge gave me some very valuable instruction, as we're going to see here in the second half here of today's program. Now, we're in the judge's chambers, remember, when we took our break here, and the judge said, "God, I thought you had them, but you let them get away." Now, the judge was a pipe smoker, and so he sat down, and he lit his pipe. Now, if you've ever watched pipe smokers, that's quite a ceremony even by itself. And he, you know, they get their lighters out. He used matches, and so he's striking matches, and he's puffing on his pipe, and big clouds of smoke are going up. And so Steve and I were just kind of sitting there watching the judge, and we have to get the conversation going, and the judge started it off, and he said, "Well, how do you think the jury will come back?" Now, this being my very first case, I never, having done a case before, much less a jury trial, I had no idea. And I said, well, I don't know. And so, to keep the conversation going, I threw the ball back to the judge, and I said, "Well, how do you think they'll come back? And he's puffing away on his pipe and keeping it lit, you know, smoking mixture 79, by the way. And he blew a big puff of smoke into the air, and he leaned forward, put his elbows on the desk, and he said, "Oh, they'll come back guilty, all right." Now, I thought that was kind of surprising. And I was curious to know, well, I wonder why you think the jury's going to come back guilty. And so I asked him, I said, "Why do you think they'll come back guilty?" And he took a big puff on his pipe, and he blew the smoke into the air, and he looked me right in the eye, and he said, "Well, because I told them to." Now, I was dumbfounded. Not only was I faced with this commie pinko fag judge, but in addition to that, he just admitted to me that he told the jury to find me guilty, but I missed it. I didn't know when he told me to do, or told them to find me guilty. I didn't know how he did that. And so I said, "Well, when did you tell them to find me guilty?" I was really incensed that he would do such a thing. Sounded like jury tampering to me. And he's puffing away on his pipe. And he said, "With jury instruction number 2. "Jury instruction number 2? And I said, "Well, what does that mean?" And he said, "The jury instructions. And the jury, you know, is made up of lay people. And they don't understand the legal issue here." Of course, I have to tell you, boys and girls, legal issue? I'd never heard of such a thing. What do you mean, legal issue? I thought we had presented the legal issue. And so the judge now, with great patience, he said, "Did you remember jury instruction number 1? I didn't. And so I said, "No, sir." And he said, "Jury instruction number 1 said, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you find that the defendant, George Gordon, stopped, entered, cleared, and paid duties in the port of entry, you must find him not guilty as a matter of law." And he said, "Now, jury instruction number 2 said, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you find that the defendant, George Gordon, failed to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty at the port of entry, then you must find him guilty as a matter of law. So he said, you see, in the first two jury instructions, I instructed the jury to find you guilty because the state came in and said you failed to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty at the port of entry. And in your testimony, you said that you failed to stop, clear, enter, and pay duty in the port of entry. So as a matter of fact, everybody is in agreement on the central issue in the case, and that is, did you or did you not stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry? And since the state was clear in their argument that you failed to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry, and your testimony corroborated their clear reference to you failed to stop, clear, enter, and pay duty in the port of entry, then everybody's in agreement. And the jury is here to decide that fact. And he said, you know, that made me wonder why you asked for a jury trial. Because the jury is limited to deciding these questions of fact. And the court is the body, the proper body, to decide the issues of law. So you demanded a jury trial to decide a legal issue that they cannot decide. And even if the legal issue, which was Article 1, Section 9, was presented to the jury, they could not hear it and they could not decide it. But he said, Article 1, Section 9 is not the issue. It's not the legal issue. It's not the factual issue. The issue to be decided, the legal issue to be decided is, was the truck loaded or was the truck empty? Now, boys and girls, the prosecution never brought up the subject of whether the truck was loaded or empty. And I didn't bring up the subject as to whether the truck was loaded or empty. And the judge here is sitting here instructing me in his chamber that the correct legal issue had nothing to do with Article 1, Section 9, and it had nothing to do with whether or not I stopped, entered, and cleared and paid duties in the port of entry, that it had to do with whether or not the truck was loaded or empty. So what the judge is saying here, he said, you know, you, Mr. Gordon, the defendant, and the state, neither one of you know or understand what the hell you're in here talking about. The state is in here arguing something that is purely factual and had not addressed my legal question in my pleadings. I had brought up the wrong legal question to be decided. And now the judge is instructing me that the correct legal issue to be brought up was whether the truck was loaded or empty. And he said the jury is going to find you guilty on an issue that isn't even the legal issue. And that is, did you or did you not stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry? Now, boys and girls, I want to point out to you right here that not just a few cases, but in most cases, defendants are convicted. And they're convicted because the defense did not raise the correct legal issue. And the state has reduced the controversy to a single clear-cut issue of fact, which could probably be overcome by the correct pleading of the legal issue, as I'm going to demonstrate here. Now, needless to say, I was kind of dumbfounded. And I said, well, I don't understand that. And he said, it's quite obvious that you don't. So the judge stood up, put his pipe in his ashtray, and behind his desk, he had a whiteboard. We used to, in the old days, have blackboards, but now we have whiteboards. And he pulled out a marker, and he wrote these words. You can follow along if you've got a pen and paper. I will code plead this out for you right here on the air, and I'll show you what the judge showed me. So the judge turned around and he wrote these four words. It says, all trucks loaded with, and he put a colon behind with. Then he turned to me and he said, now this sets the issue. All trucks loaded with. Then he was reading this out of the Idaho Code 49-29-27. And he put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 11, 16, 27, 34, and 40 in a line. And then he wrote manufactured goods, lumber, raw materials, and so on down the line. And then he got down below the number 40. He didn't write 1 to 40. He just wrote about 10 numbers down there that equaled 40. And then he said, shall stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in a port of entry, period. Now, that might be a little more difficult for you. It says, shall stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in a port of entry, period. Then he turned and he said to me, who then is required to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry? And who is not required to stop, clear, enter, and pay duty in the port of entry? Is the correct legal question. Now, if you're confused, let me assure you that I was totally confused. Remember, I came in here to talk about Article 1, Section 9, forcing vessels to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry, which is a constitutional provision. The state comes in and says, hey, this guy Gordon failed to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry in violation of the statute. The judge is diagramming the statute, code pleading it out, and asks me the question, who is required and who is not required to stop at the port of entry? And so I didn't have a clue, and my friend Steve didn't have a clue. And the judge said, empty trucks are not required to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry. Now, I'm looking up here at the whiteboard. The judge paused for effect and then said, I have been testifying before the Transportation Committee for years. At the judicial conferences, I have pointed this error out to the Supreme Court. And I have said over and over again that this statute is fatally flawed. It's not written correctly. And he said, the first guy that can come in here and argue this correctly, I'm going to cut him loose. But he said, you're not the one. You did not argue this correctly. And he said, as a matter of law, you're guilty as hell. And the jury is going to come back with a guilty verdict. And so I said, I'm not sure that I understand why empty trucks even come into the equation. And he said, well, can you understand what the intent of the legislature is here? The legislature makes the law, and the intent of the lawmaker is the law. And the intent of the lawmaker here is to exempt empty trucks and to exempt trucks that are not listed on this list. Because if the legislature had intended for all trucks to stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry, they would have said, all trucks shall stop, clear, enter, and pay duty in the port of entry. They didn't say that. They said all trucks loaded with. So they only intended for trucks that are loaded and loaded with these materials. If you had a truck that is loaded, and it does not carry one of these 40 items on the list, then it doesn't have to stop, clear, enter, and pay duty in the port of entry. And he said, it's common for trucks carrying nuclear waste to the nuclear waste site or the waste disposal site over here in Bruno, which happens to be there in Gooding County. He said, they're not on the list. They don't have to stop. And I said, well, they do. He said, well, of course they do. But that doesn't mean that they have to. They're doing it voluntarily. They want to, and so they evidently believe that their truck is too heavy, so they pull in to make sure that their truck isn't overloaded, and they pull into the scale so that they can stop, enter, clear, and pay duties in the port of entry. They're not required to, but they want to, and so they do it voluntarily. Now, there's another classification of trucks that are not listed here, Mr. Gordon. Can you see that classification? And he said the answer is empty. Now, here's the factual issue to be decided. The factual issue actually isn't, did you fail to stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry? We already know that you didn't do that. You stipulated to that in your testimony, and the state testified to that in their testimony. So we know you didn't stop, enter, clear, and pay duty in the port of entry. What we do not know here is, was your truck loaded or empty? And if your truck was it loaded with one of these 40 items? And the state never testified as to what your truck was loaded with, and they never testified as to whether or not your truck was loaded at all. And you didn't testify as to what your truck was loaded with, and you didn't testify as to whether your truck was loaded or empty. So, if I were the fact finder, if you had requested a bench trial, I would dismiss this case, and you would win, because the state failed to prove their prima facie case. You see, the state's burden in proving their prima facie case was they had to prove, number one, the truck was loaded. And they had to prove, number two, what it was loaded with. Because if the truck wasn't loaded, then it must have been empty, and the lawmaker does not require empty trucks to stop at the scale. If the truck was loaded, it had to have been loaded with one of these 40 items on the list. And if it wasn't loaded with one of those 40 items, well then, even though your truck was loaded, let's say with nuclear waste, you didn't have to stop at the scale because they're exempted. Now he went on to tell me something very important. He said, oftentimes, what isn't said is more eloquent than what is said. Did you catch that, boys and girls? Now, let me extrapolate this for you. The first thing we have to do when you have a legal question, when you're charged with a crime, when you're charged or somebody brings an action against you, it could be civil or criminal, is to ask yourself, am I guilty? I mean, it's fairly simple. Did I do this? Now, there's two elements to a crime. Element number one is intent. Did you intend to do this act? Did you intend to omit this duty? Intent. Second, the act. Did you do this act? Did you fail to perform this duty? That's all there is to it. Act and intent. If we're going to have a crime, we have to have an act with intent. If you have an act without intent, you don't have a crime. If you have intent without the act, you do not have a crime. Now, under biblical law, you can have a crime with intent only. If you lust upon a woman, you don't actually commit adultery. You just, in your mind, desire to commit adultery. That of and by itself is a crime. And you'd have to confess to that in order for us to know that. Without the act, we don't have rape. Without the act, we don't have adultery. But the civil law does not admit to one without the other. The common law does. The law of God does, but the civil law does not. So while God would punish you for the intent, the civil law does not. And if you don't intend to break the law, then you don't have a crime. All right, now, since the judge now is explaining, this is law school. I'm in the judge's chambers, and I'm going to law school, and I'm learning a valuable lesson here. It's called code pleading. It's one of those 28 things that you need to know, need to understand, need to be able to perform. Oftentimes, people will come in here to the classroom, and they'll say, just like I did, hey, that dirty commie pinko fag judge over there now, he's not honoring his oath to the Constitution. They charged me with this crime, and blah, 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 blah. And you know, most of the time these people, when we actually code plead out their case, we find that yes, indeed, they are guilty. They had an intent and they had an act. They, in fact, intended not to file their tax return. And then, in fact, they did not file a tax return. And then upon analysis, we find that yes, indeed, they did have that duty to file their tax return. Now, they didn't think they did. Most of you people out there really believe most of the nonsense that you believe, which is in fact nonsense, but to you it's very real. You know, to you, you believe what you believe, even though it's false. Now remember, I believe that the judge had violated his oath of office by telling me, you can't bring up that word Constitution. The judge was 100% correct. This was not a constitutional issue. It was a factual issue. Did you or did you not stop at the scale? Now, when I came in and said it's Article 1, Section 9, that was incorrect. In fact, there was no constitutional issue here. There was a legal issue. But the legal issue did not go to constitutional construction, and the judge ruled correctly. When he said, don't you raise that word Constitution, that dirty word, in front of the jury. First of all, it prejudices the jury, and secondly, they don't have the capacity to make the decision. Only the trial court judge does. This is why we have motion hearings. It's to bring the legal issue before the court to have the case dismissed. And, in this case, the legal issue, when I brought it up at motion hearing, I brought up the wrong legal issue. I raised the wrong legal question. And the judge gave me the correct answer to my wrong legal question. So when the judge makes his ruling, you should ask yourself, did this judge make the right legal ruling, and did I raise the correct legal issue? Because if you didn't, the judge probably gave you the right answer to your wrong question. All right, with that, I've got to leave you with this reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.